Hey, what's up, everybody? This is the MMA Talk Show, and we're back this week with a great episode for you guys. We will be recapping the last BFL card, BFL 70, a great event that took place in Vancouver last Friday. We're also speaking about other Canadian performances, and then we will go to the interviews where we are speaking with the man at Niagara Top Team, the coach Chris Prickett, and Jasmine Jesuda Vicious, who is there with him. And we're speaking to both of them about the recent performances from the gym at the BTC card and the next fight for Jasmine and next fight for other members of the gym. So we're speaking about all of this. I wanted to have Chris on for a while, and finally we did it. So I'm really happy about it. Can't wait for you guys to hear this interview. But first off, we're going to begin with a recap of the BFL 70 event that took place Friday, December 3rd in Vancouver, British Columbia. A really busy year for BFL. By far the busiest Canadian MMA promotion, and they were putting on another event. It was a good event. It was a great main event. The bantamweight championship fight between Siri City and Ali Wazouk. But we're gonna start from the bottom, and then we're going to move forward onto the top. So first fight of the night, we had Ozan Yalcin making his pro debut against Caleb Ermine, another guy making his pro debut. And Yalcin was the national wrestling champion and all stuff. So this guy is a wrestler, good one too. And he wasted no time, took the fight down as soon as it started. They exchanged a little bit on the ground, but it wasn't long until Yalcin grabbed the guillotine and submitted his opponent, Ermine, in the very first round. So what you're going to say about that? It was a super good performance. That's how you start a pro career, quite impressive. And look forward to seeing him back in the cage, maybe a little longer next time, but really good skills, really good wrestling, good grappling. So I can't wait to see old Ozan Yalcin back in the cage. Then we had Maxime Soucy, the Quebecois, who hadn't fought in a while. The guy made his pro debut and lost to Matarlo in a really weird, like super weird long head kick that he kind of blocked, but it kind of landed too and it knocked him out. It was a weird event. Then he fought Olivier Nadeau, won, and then we haven't seen him since. It was in 2018, if I believe. So he was back for the first time fighting short notice replacement Makinde Adeyemi, who's an Irish guy. Started off well, I'd say, was really clearly the most powerful striker. Soucy kept on his bike, trying to move, trying to land the most technical strikes while Adeyemi was clearly trying to take his head off. The first round was close. I must say the first round was close, but as soon as Soucy started landing his takedowns, we really saw that he was going to be able to dominate that fight on the ground, and that's really what he was able to do for the next rounds, around two and three, and in my book, should have won those both rounds 10-8. He was absolutely dominating his opponent. He had only one 10-8 on two judges' scorecards, but in the end, it doesn't really matter as he had the clean sweep, the 30-26 and 30-27s all across. Maxime Soucy, amazing performance for him in his return to action. And man, can't wait. Maybe we're going to see him again in BFL. Maybe we're going to see him in Samurai next. I don't really know, but I'm really looking forward to it. So Maxime Soucy, très belle performance, really happy for him. Then we had the upset of the night, Christian Tremaine against Dylan Schellenberg. Dylan Schellenberg is a good fighter. He hadn't started his pro career the right way, though. In his first fight, he lost to Johnny Broad in a good back-and-forth matchup where, like, both guys had their moments, but at the really beginning of round three, Broad was able to land a spinning kick to the body and was able to finish the fight with strikes after all. Then came back to the unified cage that time and fought Phil Angerov. He took him down and got triangled in the first round, 3 minutes 56, sorry, of the very first round. So he was coming in 0-2 against the prospect Christian Tremaine, who's 3-1 and is a guy who's talking a big game, and he's doing great. Had an amazing win against Austin Batra in his last fight, and Schellenberg, like, didn't buy into the hype at all, just landing some shots on him, trying to force him to grapple and just finished him with the guillotine in the very first round. It was an amazing performance. It wasn't what we were expecting at all. It wasn't supposed to happen that way, but Schellenberg just goes there again and shows that the Lee Mian fighters at the Canadian Martial Arts Center, they're just great. They're just amazing fighters. They're always ready. And Schellenberg just showed it, was not impressed by the prospect. The 3-1 guy, he was 0-2. It wasn't supposed to be that close, and he just handed his ass to him and choked him out in the very first round. So amazing performance for Dylan Schellenberg. For Tremaine, I feel like he can learn a lot from that. He can learn a lot because he's still an amazing fighter, to be honest. He's great. He's a great grappler with long limbs and stuff. He's a tricky guy to fight, but wasn't his night. Amazing performance for Schellenberg, who must not have been happy with his start. The guy started his pro career 0-2. Now he finally got his first pro win, and he's able to build upon that and move to the next step. So can't wait to see this. Then I can't even say shit about this matchup. Jaden Martin, Chester Post, like, shouldn't have happened, guys. That wasn't a bad matchup. Like, for real, I don't know if there's a problem with finding opponents for Jaden Martin. But fuck, Chester Post, that wasn't it. And like, respect to the guy. To be honest, respect to the guy. He's going out there, he's fighting. But the guy had an 8-26 pro record. You knew how this was going to go, and it happened exactly the way you thought it was going to happen in 17 seconds. So, like, you see a matchup like that, and yes, Jaden Martin was 0-1, but 0-1 because he basically blew his knee in a fight where he wasn't doing that bad. And for him to come back and fight Chester Post and just, like, posterize him, no pun intended, that wasn't a good fight, to be honest. That shouldn't have happened. And shout out to Jaden for his win. It's not his fault. He's fighting the guy that they're putting against him, and that was that guy. And he did his job, so I can't say nothing about Jaden Martin, but come on, BFL, don't do this again. That was a trash fight. We don't want to see that, man. Fucking, like, see, we want to see fights that are competitive. Like, even the, you could say, oh, Tremaine Schellenberg, oh man, it's clear that they want Tremaine to win here, but Schellenberg came in and was able to fight, and he's still early in his career. Like, we still don't know really what's up with Dylan Schellenberg. Yes, he had a rough start, but we've seen some flashes here and there, so we know he was a good fighter. Chester Post, I don't want to, like, be here and disrespect the guy. He's going into the octagon and he's fighting, but fuck, when you're 8-26, now 8-27, like, maybe it's just not the sport for you. Like, maybe we're dealing with people's health here, and I feel like it wasn't a good matchup. I wasn't pleased with that matchup, to be quite honest. So do better, BFL. Come on, you're probably the best promotion in Canada. You don't need to put on matchups like this. Then Bryce Goujon, Rafael Palomeki. Palomeki shot early, got sprawled. Goujon took his back, choked him out. Good performance by Bryce Goujon. He was able to do some good stuff. Like, it wasn't that short, to be honest. There was some grappling exchanges, but like, as soon as Palomeki shot, Goujon established a top position and was able to do the most in that fight and finish it early. So amazing performance. And now we're moving on to the fights that we really got some stuff to say about, because the co-main event was Gio Platon and Austin Russell. And guys, you know that I'm the type of guy that can here and there call out commissions. You know, I've done this before. I've done this in Quebec, quite notably, let's say like that. And I'm about to do it again, okay? Because that fight wasn't officiated good. Like, to be honest, it was a great fight. Gio Platon comes out absolutely bonkers, as he's used to do. Absolutely 10-8 Austin Russell in the first round. He's able to drop him, to land some amazing damage on the ground, have some good top control, but also complement that top control with some amazing ground and pound, some close calls, even finishes the round in his back, and he's choking him. He doesn't really have the choke synced in, but it's close to. So amazing round by Platon. 10-8, by far easy 10-8 for Gio Platon in that first round. Then comes around the second round, and you can see Austin Russell is coming back, because Gio, like, this guy, man, he's got everything. He's so athletic, so powerful. He's so gifted, naturally gifted. But I feel like he goes way too crazy. And we've seen him, like, in his previous fight, unfortunately, again, City was caught in the triangle. Like, he didn't defend well. He didn't absolutely not defend well. He wanted to punch instead of defending the triangle, and that's why he got finished. In that fight, I felt like he just went too crazy, and he found it up kind of gassed out in the second round against a very competent opponent, an undefeated opponent in Austin Russell. And Russell was able to secure the takedowns, get the full mount, absolutely dominate Gio Platon in that second round. And at the end, when they heard the clapper, Gio had something in his head that told him, I need to go fucking crazy. So he did, but he was on his back. So he basically upkicked the L out of Austin Russell in like a really egregious foul, to be quite honest. And I'm not here to blame Gio on that. Like, sometimes in the spur of the moment, shit happens. And the shit that happened here is that he upkicked him in his face while Austin had his both knees down. So absolutely illegal foul. You can see that Russell was shook up in the moment. To be honest, I was wondering, hey, is he going to be able to make it to the third round of that fight? That would suck if they had to call it there and just make it a no contest or go to the scorecards up until now and have a really super fucking weird score because we had a 10-8 in the first. And I was like, for sure, the ref's going to take a point here. Like, to be honest, he's going to take a point. And he didn't. So I was like, okay, curious decision. And to be honest, I was kind of baffled because, man, like, I don't want to say it like that, but like the Powell-Sinagoga fight kind of scarred me. And now I feel like this commission is just very local and very rooting for the guys that are from there. And Austin Russell, he's, I don't know if it's Alberta or Saskatchewan, but he's from like the prairies. And Gio is the Vancouver guy. So I was like, oh, the Vancouver guy just did a pretty bad fall and they're not taking points away from him. So that's fishy, man. That's fishy. Like the fucking Powell Dario decision. Like, you can clearly see who was dominating that fight, but still he did not win. So Les, I was wondering what the hell was happening. So they resume fighting in the third round. Of course, Russell is cool. He's okay to continue fighting, gladly enough. So they fight and Russell wins and he's about to basically tie this fight up because he clearly lost the first one 10-8. And the two rounds after, he won the second, but it wasn't not as much as a beating like as Gio did to him in the first round. So it was a 10-9 and he was on his way to win the third round 10-9. And then they're against the cage. And you know, the three or four standpoints, you've got Gio's got a body lock and Russell is on his feet, but he's putting his hands down. And as soon as he puts his hands down, Gio knees him in the head. Once again, another foul for Gio. And like, it was a bad fall for sure. But if you're trying to compare, like, the first one was really bad. His opponent had his two knees down. He was trying to upkick him in the face. It's a clear fall where you know you shouldn't do that thing. You're not supposed to do that thing. So I feel like the first foul was real egregious. The second one, when the guy's kind of playing the game of putting his hands down, not to get kneed in the face. Sometimes you just get kneed in your face. And yeah, it's a foul for sure. I felt like the first foul was better than that one. Like, the first foul was the most egregious and that one was a little less worse. So I was like, they're probably not going to take a point. But fuck, they did not only take a point, they took 2 points. So basically the referee just avenged the fact that he did not take a point on the first foul and took 2 points for the second foul, which is not how it works, guys. Like, there's a foul, it's called, you take a point. If you're not taking a point now, you cannot retroactively take a point later on in the fight because he did another foul and you're like, oh, that's two fouls now, so I'm going to take 2 points from you. That's not really how it works. Unless the last foul is so bad that you feel like you need to take 2 points away from the guy. But it was not even as bad as the first one. So Gio gets deducted 2 points in the final round. So he loses 10-7 unless... and not 10-9, and he loses the fight 28-26, which, to be honest, this fight is a draw, okay? This fight is absolutely a draw, but I felt like Gio should have lost 1 point at least for the first foul. So, in the end, it's the correct guy who won. Like, Russell deserved that win because, like, he fought his way back from a 10-8, won the two final rounds, and his opponent did a fall and lost a point. So Russell is 100% the rightful winner, and he won. So I don't feel like there should be controversy there, but, like, the way that the process that they took to get to that decision was absolutely horrendous, and it's not how it should be done, in my opinion. Like, there's a big fall, you take a point right now. There's another fall later on, and you want to take another point, then take another point, but don't take 2 points at once to compensate for the first fall that you didn't deduct point. That's not how it works. It's like, if I was saying, oh, can I change my score from round two, please? Hey, guys, I gave it 10-8 to Gio, but now finally I really feel like, while thinking about it more, that Russell should have won. So please let me correct my score from round two. You can't do that shit. So you shouldn't be able to, like, retroactively deduct points. And, man, like I said, in the end, the right guy won. But the way they took to get there was absolutely awful. And that's on the commission, man. And this commission's got to step up, because that was trash. The Powell synagogue decision was trash. And, you know, I won't lie, there's a narrative of, like, oh, yeah, when you go to BFL, when you go to Vancouver and you're from outside, you're booked to lose, basically. You're booked to lose to the local guy. And if you win, oh, like Schellenberg, like Seri, oh, it's an upset. And everybody, wow, what happened? It's an upset. But, like, you're kind of, there's this sentiment, like, in Eastern Canada. And the fact that the commission is fumbling the bag that often, it's not helping the promotion, because the promotion has nothing to do with that shit show of the Gio Platon-Russell fight. They don't have nothing to do with that. But it still reflects on them. If I think you understand what I'm saying here. Like, the actions of the commission reflect badly on the promotion, and that's not the promotion's fault. I will say it again. It's not BFL's fault that the way this fight ended up playing out. It's not their fault at all. It's not their fault either if the Powell beat Dario and got ended a decision loss in that fight. It's not the promotion's fault, but it still looks bad on the promotion either way. So I just got to call it like I see it, guys. And that's what I saw in that co-main event. And it sucks, because it was a good fight. It was a good back and forth fight with some action and the momentum swift. And I feel like we should just be here and speak about how good that fight was and how good a performance it was for Austin Russell to come back. And now Gio, yeah, he lost, but, like, small adjustments and this guy could be, like, a really amazing fighter. So it just kind of sucks that we're not speaking about this, and we're speaking about how the ref and the commission just fumbled the bag on that one. So that was the co-main event. Let's move on to the main event now, the title fight, Bantamweight Championship, Seri City, the champion, Ontario's on, fighting Ali Wazouk from Vancouver. And that was a good fight. To be honest, that was a good fight. And, like, I want to go back on the commission stuff once again, but to be honest, because of Powell Dario, I really did not know how these two first rounds were scored, to be quite honest. Because, like, if you looked at the fight, it was kind of clear that Seri was more experienced and, like, a better fighter than Ali Wazouk in the cage that night. There was absolutely no doubt about it. But still, the two first rounds were really Ali pushing Seri against the cage. And yes, Seri defended absolutely everything that Ali threw his way, but still didn't have much moment standing to really establish his dominance in that fight, and was not going in that much with the clinch striking at that point too. So to be honest, I don't know how these rounds were scored. I felt like Seri won them handily, because Ali was not able to do shit to him, basically. But Ali was still the guy pushing the pressure, putting the pressure on his opponent, was still the guy pushing him against the cage and trying the takedowns. And I know you can't win a round by just defending, but Seri was not just defending, was completely shutting his opponent down, and he wasn't able to do nothing. So basically, that's what we got for the two first rounds. And Seri really got comfortable in that type of matchup, that type of wrestling exchange heavy matchup. And you could really see by round three that he was turning up the notch a little bit in his striking, because they had some moments where they were at range, and you could really see that Seri was the better striker. But also in the clinch, really turned up with the clinch striking. And that's what ended up winning him the fight, basically, because, yes, there was a takedown landed in round three. Seri had some top control and stuff. was never taken down by Ali, who was the great wrestler in that matchup that was supposed to bring some amazing wrestling. He was never able to take Siri down. Siri was really ready for that threat. And in the fourth round, while they were in the clinch exchanging, Siri landed a very sneaky liver shot. And you can really see that it bothered Ali. And it was enough for him. It was enough for Siri. Saw the opportunity and went crazy on him. Was able to finish the fight and defend his championship. Move on to 6-1. And you know, Siri City is starting real fast to become one of the next Canadian fighters that's going to make the jump to the UFC. You know, when you're younger in your career, you can see the potential develop. But I feel like not only he's kind of developed his potential, but we're seeing him get better and better every fight. And to be quite honest, I'm really impressed. The guy only lost once, and that was in basically a grappling heavy match with Matteo Vogel, and he did not get finished by Matteo, which is crazy because Matteo absolutely finishes everybody on the ground. He is by far the best 135-pound grappler in Canada. I know there was some comments made there that Ali was the best grappler in that division. And I know that the guys in Ottawa, they kind of took offense to that because, like, Matteo is by far the best submission grappler. And he wasn't able to finish Siri. So that's the only loss Siri had. He's 6-1 now. He's a champion for BFL. So the guy's on his way. He won or two fights. And I feel like we could see him on the contenders or at a bigger stage. So big shout out to Siri City. Really impressed by his performance. And in the end, it was a good event. I want to give props to BFL. I know, like, I'm more positive than that usually, but like I had some stuff to say here about the commission and about the Martin post matchup. It was not a good matchup. I don't want to see matchups like this. But all in all, it was a good event. It's always good and exciting stuff with BFL. Can't wait to see what they're cooking for us next. And yeah, that's about it for them. Going to move on to Bellator now because we had two fighters in action, two great Canadian fighters. The first one of them is the gentleman, Josh Hill. And he absolutely destroyed his opponent. He's so patient. He's so technical in the cage, but he's an amazing counter striker. And you know that the guy is always looking to set up his perfect shot, to set up his big overhand right. And he did a lot of that against Jared Scoggins, who is the other Scoggins. You know, we had Justin Scoggins in the UFC. That's his brother. He's a little bigger, but he came in with a 10-1 pro record. I won't say hyped up prospect, but like a guy that we know he's good. He's not really a prospect anymore, but we know he's a good established fighter. And Josh Hill really wanted to bounce back from that loss to Rofion Stutz, and he did it in a major way at 56 seconds, of the second round, landed that overhand right, absolutely knocked the shit out of his opponent. A real clear decisive finish for Josh Hill. Really happy for the guy. This guy's so cool. I love him. He's one of the best Canadian fighters for like a while now. The guy has been fighting since 2009, and all the 2010s was representing Canada for World Series of Fighting. Only lost to Marlon Moraes, and then he had the run in TKO, and then he was able to come back and fight for Bellator, sign for Bellator, where he's absolutely having success. He's now 3-1, and his only loss is to Stutz, who should be fighting for a belt for that promotion. So amazing stuff for our man, Josh, the gentleman Hill. And right after that, Jeremy Kennedy, Emmanuel Sanchez, and man, Jeremy Kennedy is not fun to fight. This guy is an amazing grappler. He's going to take you into deep waters because his top control is amazing, and he's also a very good scrambler. So the guy wants to get you in these grappling scrambled exchanges where he's always going to end up with the best position. And after that, he's going to make you like feel super bad under him. And it's not a good time to fight Jeremy Kennedy. It's just not a good time. And he was fighting Emmanuel Sanchez, who has kind of fallen off, I won't lie. Had a good 2019, good 2020. But when the featherweight tournament came around, got choked out by Patricio Pitbull and then lost to Mads Burnell and then to Jeremy Kennedy, who I feel like Jeremy is a little more established than Mads Burnell. So that's why I was really confident for Jeremy going into that fight, is because I kind of already saw Sanchez lose to that type of like grappling heavy opponent. And I feel like Kennedy's probably a little more advanced, a little more experienced than Mads Burnell at this point. So when I saw that, I was like, oh man, that's a good matchup for Kennedy if he could stick to the game plan. And that's exactly what he did. He took the guy down. He dominated him on the ground. And it was an easy win, but a great win against a great opponent, a guy that, like in 2018, 2019, when he was at the peak of his abilities, this guy, I feel like he could have rivaled with any top 15 featherweight in the world. Now, like I said, he's kind of falling off a little bit, but still. Amazing stuff by Jeremy Kennedy, and I'm really happy for him. And the final fight, Josh Silvera, Jared Revel, that was the LFA 119 main event. And Jared did very well for himself. Like, I must say, I'm really, really proud of him. He fought, like, you know, Josh Silvera is the son of Conan Silvera, the ATT guy, the ATT coach. I think he's even like an owner or a co-founder. Like, he's a big guy at ATT, let's say like that. And his son Josh is pretty good, and he's fighting pro, and he's undefeated, and he was going down to 185 to get a second belt. He's already the LFA light heavyweight champion. And you knew that this guy that's big, that's strong, it was gonna be a tough matchup for Jared, who is getting older, let's say like that. He's getting older. And it was really his chance to go out there and win the LFA belt and tell the UFC that, hey, even though I'm, let's say, on the older side of stuff, you need to sign me. And unfortunately for him, he was not able to do this. But still, like, there were many exchanges. Almost all the fight was disputed on the ground. And to be quite honest, at no point I really felt like Silvera was close to finishing Revel. And that's amazing, you know, to be able to fight such a high-level grappler in Josh Silvera and just not get finished, not only, but just not be in trouble that much. Yes, he was not having the better positions, but like the way he utilized his butterfly guard here to constantly re-guard and constantly keep Silvera from getting into these good positions. And like, you look at Rivera's record, Silvera's record, he won, let's say, before Revel, head kick TKO, rear naked choke, arm triangle, head kick KO, rear naked choke. So the guy had never went to a decision, and Revel took him to a 5-round decision, and really gutsy performance, a really good performance for Jared. So I know he's probably not happy about the way that the fight ended up, because, like, you know, it was his big chance to prove to everybody that he's UFC level. I feel like he kind of still shown that with that performance, to be that competitive with an amazing grappler like Revel. I feel like that's the way that you prove to everybody that you should be in the bigger leagues, because this guy has been training since his youngest age with the best fighters in the world at ATT. So amazing stuff by Jared. I'm really proud of him. And that was the Canadian performances of the week. There were many. And now we are moving on to the interviews with Chris Prickett and Jasmine. Have a good podcast, guys. What's up, everybody? We're here to recap an amazing night at BTC and even more. But if you want to talk about BTC and about people that had an amazing night, we're talking to Chris Prickett, man. What's up?
What's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing great. So before we get into the meat and the bones and stuff, like, how are you feeling about this BTC event? Your guys went in, got out with a perfect record.
Yeah, like, it's so funny you just saying that. I kind of forgot about it. sounds bad, but no, it was a great night. It was like, you know, you have those nights where everything's going great leading up to camp, and you just hope it shows fight night, and that's what happened. It showed fight night. We went 4-0 for the night. We had a great performance. We got 3 finishes. Some big wins for our guys, and in the hometown, it was sweet.
For sure. And what's happening at your gym, man? Because, like, I'd say 2 years back, we were hearing, like, here and there, like, oh, Chris Prickett, Matt DiMarcantonio, and that, but never as much as in the past 2 years, where you guys basically just took over, and now you got fighters on every Canadian card, winning, doing amazing stuff. So what's happening in that gym, man? Must be something special.
Nothing. I wish it was something special. It's just hard work. Like, literally, we, you know, I come from a wrestling background. That's my, like, you know, my background in martial arts is wrestling. I wrestled until I was like almost 30. And then I transitioned and got into jiu-jitsu and MMA. So I'm just kind of following the recipe that wrestling taught me with work ethic and just putting the hours in. I've been fortunate enough to have a lot of like great coaches in my life. And, you know, it's to me, what I've learned in this sport is like what you put into this sport is what you're going to get out. So we put in a lot of work day in and day out. Like I know everybody says that. I don't know how many people are actually doing that. We're really putting tons of hours in the gym and just trying to be better every single day through hard work and smart work too. I feel like, yeah, work hard, work smart, but it's the hard work that's setting us apart right now.
Yeah, that's what I heard, to be quite honest, because Powell is one of my friends and we often speak, and that's what he told me, like the work ethic and that gym and the wrestling, of course, because like you've got amazing wrestling pedigree and you're probably, are you still teaching at Brock?
I haven't yet because everything with COVID and the restrictions and whatnot. So I'm looking like I'm going to go back in January, but at this time, I'm just solely at the gym, full time with NTT.
Cool. So yeah, but that's kind of the best wrestling program in Canada. It's well known. So that background coming into to the gym, that's what Zach has been telling me. The wrestling is something else, and the work ethic. Everybody's just working hard and
yeah, doing not- their wrestling though, like it's set apart from other gyms, but I feel like our striking and our jiu-jitsu, you know, we have Matt DiMarcantonio, 20 professional fights. He's a he's the mad scientist, we call him. He's a like a gifted mind when it comes to martial arts. He's so well rounded. He's good everywhere. We just brought in this guy, Matt Jelly.
What's up, Jelly?
So he's here with us now full time for the time being, anyways. So we're good everywhere. I feel like we're really well rounded. Maybe the wrestling is what we're more known for, but I think we're good everywhere.
For sure. And by the way, what's up, Jasmine? We see half of you, but how are you doing? I'm gonna say your name right today, Jasmine Jesus the Vicious.
Perfect.
I had slept like 1 hour last time we met. Basically, I slept 1 hour between the samurai card and the time we left for St. Catherine. So man, I was destroyed, not to say the least, but how are you doing, Jess?
I'm doing well.
Yes, excited for the big fight. As we were speaking, now on the pay-per-view, heavyweight title, like probably the event that's going to kick off the new year, and you're on it. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, it's crazy. I couldn't, like when my manager called and said that it's being moved a week, and I was jacked up once I saw the card.
Man, it's an amazing lineup, and we've got a fight that, like, here in our parts in Quebec, is one of the most anticipated fights because we had the chance to see Cyril Gann make his pro debut here for the TKO organization. So we kind of adopted him a little bit, and we were really rooting for the guy. So it's going to be an amazing matchup, but to see you make your debut there too, it's going to be a good time. But Kay Hansen, is she moving up? Or you're moving down? I felt like she's a 15.
Yeah, she's moving up.
Yeah, she's moving up. Yeah, I think she's doing some reverse diet thing or something.
She's doing the Twitter for sure, though. Yeah, have you seen her Twitter? She's kind of popping over there.
Yeah, no, I'm glad she's getting all the fans so I can snag them.
For sure. How do you feel about the matchup?
I think it's a good matchup. I mean, obviously, you know, she's good. She's in the UFC, so she's got to be skilled. And but I think it's a favorable matchup for me. I'm looking forward to getting in the cage and showing her what I'm doing.
For sure. And for you, coach, do you feel the same? What's the specific thing you love about this matchup?
Like she said, they're all tough in the UFC. You look at the roster, they're all good. Again, I just think Jazz is, I think she's doing the right work. I'm not sure if this girl is.
Yeah, man. Like I said, like there's a couple people on the women's side in the UFC that you look at, like they got, let's say, other things going on. And I feel like these other things kind of make them a little more popular, let's say, like that. And I feel like she's one of them. Yeah. I feel like she may not be the
man. Exactly, man. Like you follow Jazz around for a week, you'll see what she's doing. It's day in and day out. There's no time for OnlyFans. There's no time for all these other things, whatever's going on. We've seen quite a few girls on the roster and stuff, and we know where we're at. We've got to train with some of the best girls in the world. Jian Kim is a girl that we train with a fair bit in Syndicate. She's going to be on the card as well. We've trained with her, you know, JoJo, Roxanne, all the top girls in the world. So, you know, we know where we're at, and we're pumped. We're excited. It's going to be a big show. At the end of the day, we still have to go out there and execute. So that's all the focus is, just going out there and making sure that we see the best version of Jazz that night.
Yes, I speak a little bit about that Syndicate connection, because I feel like in the pandemic time especially, must have been great to just be there and be able to train and have all these bodies for Jasmine, but also for Aaron, for all the guys that went down there. There's lots of, yes, beautiful Aaron Jeffrey t-shirt here. So yeah, it must have been really cool for you guys to be able to train down there and have that access.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was like so nice to actually have a bunch of girl partners. When I went down there initially, it was like when the whole COVID restrictions were like super strict here. And so it was tough for partners. Now, you know, everything's kind of back to normal. And so I've got partners now, but it was crazy when I initially going down there and seeing all these girls. It was nuts.
Yeah, for sure. And that, you think about like being a little looser, that's what I really, really liked about the BTC card. Because I went, when was it? End of September, I believe. It was the card they did in the gym, in the BTC gym. That, yeah. Like the card pretty much fell apart. It was still a good event, but there were four fights. But man, the commission were running a tight ship back there. Like we couldn't really move from our media spot or anything. So we enjoyed the fight, but it was tough to move around, talk to people. And like at the Meridian Center, man, I feel like it was the free for all, to be honest. Everybody were moving around. I spent half the night on the floor, even though I was supposed to be
up a little bit, I think, for the Meridian Center show. I was not the one in Burlington, but the Meridian Center was, it was awesome from start to finish. The show was
a really good show.
Yeah, it was really, really well run. They had the intermission. The one intermission, they had Jazz do a little talk. I actually missed it. I still haven't seen it, but she spoke on the mic.
And that then was better than the fashion show, man.
Yeah, I could have just been the fashion show. But other than that, yeah, the fashion show was whatever. But
they should have brought Aaron. I know he doesn't like to speak that much, but fuck, man, give us AJ. Give us something.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. So, hey, let's talk about the fight a little bit, starting with Cody. Real amazing pro debut in my book. Couldn't really ask for more. So what are the thoughts on that? This great pro Cody, debut for?
Yeah, Cody, I mean, a kid that's, you know, had a good amateur record, and COVID kind of slowed things up for him. He was looking for a fight. We ended up getting one amateur fight throughout the past 2 years, but kid's been training and he lives with us as well. So he's a great kid and he's a great fighter. I'm glad that he was able to go out there and demonstrate what he's capable of. He's looking at a quick turnaround. He wants to fight again soon. So we're just going to keep the ball rolling. Cody was awesome, man. It was so, you know, that was a special one for me to be there for him for his pro debut.
For sure. It was an amazing performance. I was like, I won't say I was surprised, because when I know a guy's coming from your gym, I kind of expect big things from him. And he really delivered on that front. So it was great. Then Vinny.
Yeah.
That kid's good, huh?
Oh, man. Vinny's a killer. Like Vinny trains with us a couple days a week, 2 or 3 days a week. He trains with us. He supplements his training with Grant's brothers in Toronto, as well as he teaches jiu-jitsu himself. So he's a busy guy. And just a phenom on the ground, and you got to see that he's dangerous, man. He's a real threat at 135, not at just level, but high level. He's got high level grappling now. His hands are coming along too, and his wrestling is great. So Vinny, he's really going to be he's top runner for this $10,000 tournament. I'm excited for the one in March. He'll be fighting on that one.
For sure, he's going to have some brother killing to do, though. I feel like these guys have put a target on their backs, the two brothers. But, like, if you listen to...
Kind of messed up on my side. I don't know if that's on your side, too, but...
No, I'm hearing you, though. I bet it's all perfect. But What I was saying is that if you like, if you listen to people around Canada, there's hype for the brothers and stuff. But if you really take the pulse in Ontario, everybody's telling you Vinny's winning that tournament. And
yeah, like I don't know a ton about the brothers. I met them backstage. They're super nice guys. They seem like they got the right mentality and they're doing the right work and they're cool. They're good fighters. So it'll be interesting, but I'm pretty confident. Again, I get to see Vinny on the daily. I get to see what he does on the ground. I don't know if anyone's going to be able to stop him at this level. He's a real threat. He's a dangerous submission artist. And now he's just getting more and more comfortable on the feet. So we'll see. It'll be good. It's exciting, man. I love it. I love the hype around it and what they've created. And this is what we need in Ontario. We need, you know, these storylines to happen. And people see this is a real skill division. And now there's down to four in this tournament. I hope people are getting hyped for it and hope people are going to tune in and watch.
For sure. I don't think I'm going to be able to make it to the next event because, man, London, Windsor, that's fucking far, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll be here for sure via stream and stuff. I hope all the stream works and I'll be there for sure because I can't wait for the conclusion of this tournament. I like I told many people, I feel like the guy that's going to be able to win this tournament is going to become like the prospect to watch at that weight in Canada. So it's an amazing opportunity for the guys. And then we had T-Shay, I think more things happened before the fight that in the fight per se. The guy absolutely dominated his fight. It was a good performance. But, man, how many, like, opponent changes and stuff happened to T-Shay before that fight, man? That's pretty crazy.
Adversity. That's what we train hard for, is for these, like, unknowns. And that's what I said to him. Like, I said to everybody, like, just be ready. Some shit's going to go down. It's not going to be the way you thought it was going to be. Whether it's an opponent pulling out or something happening with the commission or last minute, some of your medicals get fucked up, just be ready and be ready to persevere. And that's what he does every single time. T-Shay is he's going to go far in this sport. He's going to go very far in this sport. He's got the right mindset. He's what I wish every single fighter in my gym has. Like, he knows how to turn it up for the big competitions. He's still developing as a fighter himself. Like, from each discipline, you know, getting his jiu-jitsu better, his wrestling better, his striking better. But mindset, night of the fight, that's the carbon copy. He's so confident in himself.
And he loves it. He loves fighting. He loves everything about it. He loves, like, this show. He loves, like, being, you know, all the eyes on him. He loves everything about fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was super glad for him because, like it wasn't, if you look at the old card, it wasn't the most exciting fight on the card or nothing like that. But, like, I saw all the things happening with him before the fight, and I was just so happy that he was able to come out and dominate and, yeah, utilize his wrestling, good ground control. When he knew he had the guy done, he just fucking finished him. He just, like, put him away. So that's what you want to see, because his LFA fight was a real coming out party for me. To be able to go to LFA on such short notice again, fight an amazing fighter and pretty much almost beat him. And like, yeah, I was like, I knew this guy was good. I was super impressed when he fought his first pro fight for BTC. I was like, oh, never seen a guy making his pro debut that's that comfortable in the cage. But to be able with three fights to go there and beat a guy that's that close to the UFC, man, yeah, that was an amazing amazing thing for him.
Again, a kid that, like, he came down to Vegas with us and got it to test himself against some of these guys at Syndicate, and he got to really see his level. He hasn't, like, ventured too far from Niagara Top Team. He's been with us from the beginning with D-Marks right from the start, and I've been with him since, like, his early amateur days. So he hasn't really got to see, compared to some other high level guys at 135. And when we went to Syndicate, I told him, like, man, you're right there with these guys that are in the UFC that are just on the cusp. So I think Syndicate and our relationship is great. It's something I'm looking forward to continuing to build and grow and utilize them and go down there and train with those guys, because T-Shay, that was huge for him. He took a big level up in his trip down there and, again, just showed fight night.
For sure. Then Xavier, another guy who had a short notice fighter that really came to fight, man. I was super surprised by the Frenchman was down. Often, like, with Frenchmen, it's weird because people from France, you just don't know. Like, some come in and they're really fucking good, and some other come in and you're like, oh, okay, where is he training? Like, what's up with him? But Xavier had a good Frenchman in front of him and was really able to implement his game pretty well and win that fight handily.
He was good. He was good. I love how you call him a Frenchman. He was a good. Yeah, man. But we knew that. We knew he was going to be good. Like 4-0. You're not 4-0 by accident. I know some people have padded records, but if you look at the people he beat, that guy was legit. And he's a 170-er. So we're fighting up at 170. Two of our guys fought up a weight class just to not, you know, because they want to fight. That's Xavier. He is, again, just tough as nails. And he suffered some split decision, I think two split decision losses, I mean, in his career. Couple close fights that could have went either way. So his record doesn't necessarily tell the story. What is he? I think he's 6-4 now.
Yeah, but I that's one thing I'm really happy to see him finally develop a good record, because the guy is good. Like, you see him fight, he's good, man.
And again, like, a tough fight. I think he lost the first round. The first round was close. Came back second round and then turned it up in the third round and solo staked out.
Awesome in the third.
Yeah, that was a good fight, man. That guy was tough and he was pegged as a bit of a striker, but he had some good takedown defense. He made Xavier work.
Could get up off the bottom.
Yeah, he was good getting there. Up. He was tough, man. That kid's young too. He'll be someone that he'll be fighting at a high level promotion soon, I'm sure.
Yes. Two more guys I want to speak about. Romero had a pretty good win in Is it still in Texas, Fury FC?
It was in Texas. Yeah, like Romero. I mean, so Jazz went through the tough loss a couple fights ago, and bouncing back after a loss like that when he was 9-0, that close to the UFC, then taking a loss, it just shows his character that he's able to persevere. And so many people, like, you know, talk about bouncing back after a loss and all this. And this was a tough loss. He bounced back. He came out. He got the job done against a kind of awkward guy. The guy gave him trouble in the first round, clipped him. We still got to watch it back. If it was a headbutt or it was a left hook, it doesn't matter. He wobbled him, lost the first round. And their genius goes and just does the smart thing and gets a win and solidifies it with takedowns and stuff and did what he had to do to make sure he got back in the win column. And now he's right back in, you know, hopefully the UFC's eyes as a prospect, and we'll see what's next for him. But it was a great fight, and Lyndon was out there with them, and Agus. They also, like, just to go back on, like, a lot of our guys are getting a lot of props in Niagara Top Team, but Agus MMA, we train alongside them a couple days a week. Lyndon and the crew and Lucas, those guys are all always working alongside us, and we're working together. So it's a group effort, really. We got a good thing going. We're going to House of Champions tonight for sparring. Jazz is going to be sparring with Belbita. It's the community. We're doing it all together, and it's good. We're rising up together. Ontario MMA coming together, trying to make it happen.
Yeah, for sure. And we kind of seen that happen in BC a little bit, and I think it really raised their levels. And they made him not want to fight each other and bring in other people to screw them. But that's an whole other that's a whole other thing. But it's really cool.
Yeah.
Then AJ. Like, AJ and Romero, man, they both make me sad a little bit. Like, Romero, the fucking guy he beat at the Contenders, he's somehow in the UFC now and got his ass super whooped in his first fight. And, like, he shouldn't be there, and Anthony should be, and he's not. And that pisses me off a lot. And for AJ, man, he's, like, that close every time. And you know the guy has the level, man. If there's one...
AJ's lost to all three of them in the UFC and, like, doing well. And yeah, both those guys, like
the guy basically had his end full with AJ. They book him 2 weeks later. He ruins a poor guy and gets signed. So that, man,
we these guys haven't had it easy, bro. If you go on and look at, like, Romero's, the guys beat, all the guys that he's beat, look at their combined record. Look at AJ's guys, all that he's beat and who he's lost to. Look at their combined record. These guys are not taking easy fights. They're not trying to pad their records. They're taking tough fights. And, it's a product of our environment. We don't have shows every week to just, you know, build records and stuff. So some, you know, whatever. We wouldn't have it any other way. But yeah, I feel for both those guys. They both should be fighting at that level. They should both be in the UFC, but they're not, and they will be soon. So it is what it is. But yeah, I mean, look at who just fought Chiesa on the weekend. The guy that won it. Who is it? Sean Brady. Like, look at Sean Brady. He's on a tear. That was Don's first loss. That was his first loss. The guy you just mentioned, and then who's the other one?
Brendan Allen. He lost to fucking Brendan Allen.
These are his losses. Like, yeah, exactly. So, and again, he spent a lot of time in Vegas. So we've got to see him. I've got to watch him personally spar with some of the top level guys like Sean Strickland and these guys. And I see where Don's level is at, and he's right there. So it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, no, for sure. If there's one thing we know is that these two guys are going to be in the UFC. I just think they should be now, and like not losing years of their career, not getting paid, basically. But, man, everything's going to be good in the end, for sure. Yeah. So, final thing I want to know about. The legendary Prickett household, man. Everybody... has been telling me, like, everybody's living there. There's in and out movement. It's a good place to be, man. So can you just speak to the people about what's the...
It wasn't always meant to be like that, but it just turned into it. It's a fighter house, wrestler/fighter house. The whole time I've been here, I've always... it's a 5-bedroom house. Right from the time I moved in, we always had roommates. So I always had the Brock wrestlers living here. And then I've had fighters living here as well. So currently right now on the roster is, we got Jelly. He's here. We got Kevin, who's just went home for a little bit for 2 weeks, but he's coming back, Papa Wick. And then we got Cody. Don lived here for a couple of years. He just moved out before he went to Vegas, I think. Mm-hmm. He got his own place with Vlad. Luke lived here for a bit. Luke Roberts, obviously, Pow Pow lived here. Who else? Quite a few. But it's good.
Name them.
Yeah, pretty much. Most of the team have lived here at some point. It's good. It's just we're all chasing the same dream. So it's cool to be around each other. We come home. We talk about fighting. We put fighting on the projector. We watch fights. You know, it's kind of like you get fat shamed here. Like, I lived with Don for 2 years. Like, I can't eat. Like, if I'm eating a cookie in the kitchen, he's looking over at me now. It's good. Like, you just, we train together, we live together. It's a good dynamic. And now that we got Jelly here, I just feel like everything's complete for Jazz and for the team. He was like almost meant to be, to have this guy here and helping us. And I think you're going to see another level from the gym, hopefully in these upcoming fights. We're going to get to see some of the Jelly striking put on display.
For sure, man. But like I told you in the DMs, you're on your way, guys, because with that night at BTC and the Romero win, you guys now have a better record than TriStar with the same number of Canadian fights like on your record. You guys are number one in the country basically right now.
Bigger organizations, but still, it is what it is. Yeah, that's cool to hear. But we're not in competition with anybody but ourselves. We're just trying to be, you know, I just want to see all these guys reach their potential in this sport and whatever that is. That's all we're trying to do, you know, and also build our recreational program too. We have a pro team because we have a recreational kids program. We got all these other, you know, jiu-jitsu classes and adult striking classes and stuff. And that's what's keeping the doors open. So, you know, it's more than just some of these pro fighters. It's the whole gym. We got a great community. They're so supportive. Yeah, we got
crazy
some.
Crazy how supportive everyone is.
Yeah, they just all. It's really cool. It's really cool what's going on. So, I just feel like we're lucky. We just got to keep it going, keep our fucking noses down, keep grinding, and we're gonna get there.
For sure, it's working, man. Congratulations for everything. I'm gonna let you guys go, Jasmine. We're rooting for you. You're our newest UFC girl, and we're gonna be following your career closely, even closer than we were already. So. We're really happy for you. We're happy for Chris and Matt and all Jelly and all the people at the gym working hard day in, day out. And I'm going to let you continue your grind because, as I see you guys, you're never stopping. So I'm wasting your time right now. I'm gonna let you guys go.
Great talking to you. And thank you for all the publicity and putting out the word about us too, because, you know, it goes a long way and we appreciate you too. So thanks a lot for having us on, buddy.
Hey, for sure, man. Like I always said, I'm here for the fighters, man. Everybody else can fuck off, but I'm here for the fighters, and I'm here to spread the good word. So, man, we'll keep in touch.
Sounds good, for sure, buddy. Okay, have a good one.
Thank you very much.
See you, buddy.